via medium wave, short wave, and satellite. This is the Dutch International Service.
Keep this frequency clear.
Media Network, the weekly communications review, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
Hello, glad you joined us. And in the next half hour, Diana Janssen and I will try to give you an overview of what's happening in the world of international radio. And we'll be focusing on developments in community broadcasting in Africa.
By the way, we're pleased there have been so many entries to the Big Bells contest. We're still waiting for postal entries from Africa and Asia. So we'll draw the winners towards the end of the month while the mailbags come in.
In fact, we know that the overall reaction to Radio Netherlands programmes over 1994 was up over the same period in 93. 121,885 reactions to the programmes, to be precise, of which 73,538 were directed to the English section. And that's not counting the phone calls. So do keep the reaction pouring in. My colleagues and I use your suggestions to shape our programme output. And we believe there's an important role for international broadcasting in a world that's still polarised.
Hi to people like Bent Eriksson in Sweden, who sent in useful feedback to the show this week. And Paul Walton in Bromsgrove, England, who was one of many people to react positively to last week's in-depth feature on sweepers and voice acting. Good evening as well to K. Srinivas in Chilakaluripet in India, who says that he actually stays home to listen to the media information he gets from Radio Netherlands.
There's dedication for you. This past week there was a strange picture in one of the national newspapers here showing someone windsurfing down a totally submerged part of the A2 motorway near Den Bosch in the south of the Netherlands. A rather different and not so amusing way of surfing the highways, as it were. The serious flooding problems which affected this part of Europe over the last few weeks also resulted in heightened media interest from other radio and television stations around the world. During the height of the emergency last week, Radio Netherlands provided reports in English, Dutch, French and Spanish to 22 radio stations around the world, including ABC New York, BBC World Service, Radio Singapore, CBC and Call Israel.
Tomorrow we are starting a forced evacuation. At that moment we are starting with 10 to 15,000 people.
In all, as many as 65,000 people in a dozen villages in the eastern part of the country will be forced to leave their homes.
And there are a lot of farmers who now are concerned about the cattle.
Okay, now that they've announced that another 140,000 people will have to, or are being urged, let's say, to leave their homes, are you able to cope with this number of people?
It's impossible at this stage to even begin to guess at the extent of the direct and immediate material damage caused by the flood.
There was particular interest from stations in Canada and Australia that carried Dutch language programs for immigrants from the Netherlands.
Hello, this is Holland calling with Anke Dekker.
For the next hour, CJBB 1470 presents a program in the Dutch language. The music, the news, the lifestyles of Holland. Now, here's Anke.
Marcel Rommert in Arnhem phoned the answer line to remind us that the local community radio stations in the affected area were also working overtime. Michel van der Voort, policy advisor for the OLON, the umbrella organisation which represents many community stations here, confirms they played an important role. For the last time we had serious flooding was in December of 1993.
This time they were better prepared for it. There are now about 370 stations. At a coming disaster, it's always very important to know what will happen right next to your door.
While we were trying to keep our feet dry, representatives from community radio organizations from all over the world gathered in Dakar, Senegal, in West Africa to discuss future developments of their type of local radio. Radio Netherlands' Veronica Wilson was there and met up with Steve Buckley, Vice President for Western Europe for AMARC, which is the French abbreviation for the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. But what with the European Broadcasting Union, the Asian Pacific Broadcasting Union and other such bodies around the world, what has AMARC to contribute?
Certainly there are problems. In some countries it's very difficult to carve out a space even for community radio to exist. The broadcasting landscape varies enormously from one country to another. Regulatory circumstances vary enormously from one country to another, and in countries without a strong tradition of and commitment to freedom of expression, it's often not even legal to set up a community radio station, even though there are frequencies available, even though there are people that would like to set these radio stations up. It's simply not possible to obtain a license to do so. This sort of restriction on freedom of expression is the sort of problem that community radio broadcasters face around the world, and which coming together in an international association can assist us to confront and to do something about.
Perhaps you can give us specific examples where these problems are very acute.
The most difficult situation for us in Europe today is obviously is the situation in former Yugoslavia. The role of the independent media in former Yugoslavia is extremely important as a means of promoting tolerance, dialogue and so on. But in certain countries, the governments are now clamping down on independent media and are not allowing them. Croatia is a particularly bad case in point, where there were some independent stations, community-type radio stations, which no longer exist. All the stations in Croatia, to all intents and purposes, are either government-run stations or are commercial stations that are more or less controlled by the government. In Serbia, there are still some independent stations like Radio B92 in Belgrade, Radio Bajna Bašta, and some other stations in Montenegro as well. And these stations are amongst the few media surviving which are promoting tolerance towards other nations.
But what about other regions? At the conference, Senegalese officials announced 80 FM frequencies will now be made available for community broadcasting. Elsewhere, though, things are not as easy.
My name is Guantaine Boroki. I'm the vice president of AMAC for Africa. Africa's problems actually stem from history, in the sense that broadcasting was introduced in Africa mainly as a means of control by the colonial powers. And then when the African governments took over, they actually took over also that mantle, whereby they took broadcasting as, although they claim that radio broadcasting is supposed to bring people together, they have used the radio to popularize themselves, to control the people and that kind of thing. And out of it has developed an intolerance for any means of communication that tends to liberate the people. And you'll find that in Africa, they liberally register newspapers, they allow newspapers because they know that these are just for an elite population within each of the communities, an elite that has got very little contact with the rural people. But when you talk of broadcasting, you are going to talk to people, you're going to empower the people, you're going to give people a tool that helps them to conscientize themselves to the issues that arise in their day-to-day lives. Allowing community broadcasting is losing power on the part of the government. And this one, of course, has created a problem whereby community radios are not usually allowed to operate. You can see the case of South Africa, which has just become independent. You would have expected that really the government would have liberally licensed radio stations. We have radio stations, community radio stations, that have already been set up, they have been equipped. People are on the ground, but they are still waiting for licensing, and nobody knows when that will happen. There is, of course, also the problem of knowledge, because a lot of people do not understand what community broadcasting is all about. In fact, the current spread of ideas on community broadcasting that has spread in Anglophone Africa has arisen out of the intervention of AMAC.
International broadcasters such as BBC, VOA and Radio France International have been actively trying to set up relays and co-productions in Africa. In some countries, international broadcasters simply arrive and set up a relay of their own output. In others, they actually contribute to the liberalization of the media by supporting independent local operators.
Once the government realizes there is pressure from Democrats, what will happen is that there will be more private radios licensed, there will be commercial radios licensed, but these ones will be the ones that will accommodate the status quo. But if you have the international broadcasters coming in, intervening as part of pressure groups to kind of pressurize the African governments to recognize community broadcasting, then that one would be a useful contribution, because without that pressure, we'll be fighting our battles alone and we'll be losing them alone. But once we have got the international backing, then we'll be able to move. The question is what role really the community broadcasters will be playing in areas of conflict.
And in a future media network, we'll examine how the media are trying to help in the process to rebuild Rwanda. But there is resistance to local community broadcasting elsewhere on the continent. For example, getting licenses is not easy in Kenya at the moment. Wangu Mwangi from Echo News Africa explains that they're trying to set up private local FM stations in Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania. Uganda and Tanzania have granted licenses, but the government in Nairobi still keeps a tight grip on things.
Well, at the moment, things are very uncertain because there's a task force looking into the deregulation of the media and seeing whether they're going to allow, this is the electronic media, because the print media is deregulated to a large extent, but they want to see how to deregulate the electronic media, whether to grant private licenses to individuals, to political parties and other applicants. So at the moment, there are a lot of applications to the government for private licenses, but they haven't granted any. And so the Minister for Information went on record recently and said that they were not planning to grant any licenses in the near future. So things are uncertain.
This is KBC Nairobi.
In fact, Echo News Africa is not trying to go into direct competition with the state-run Kenya Broadcasting Corporation.
These are very small FM radio stations, just covering a radius of maybe 40 kilometers, not more, but just for the communities themselves to express their own interests, their own development priorities and things like that, and to talk to one another. So in that context, it's not really a national level initiative, but it is something that community people want. We have talked to a few international agencies, UNEP, for instance, United Nations Environment Programme. We've talked to some Canadian institutions and people like that. So we are talking to different funders, and so we are working on different levels at the same time, because we really want to make sure that the community people themselves run the radio stations. We don't want to bring in professionals from outside. So we have to organize training programs for them. We don't have any experience in this kind of thing, so we have to learn from other community stations in other parts of the world. So everything is happening at once.
Well, for Kenya in particular, this is not the first excursion that you're having into trying to get community radio stations established in the country. In the 80s, you had the Homa Bay experience, where a certain region of Kenya had a community radio station flourishing until it was shut down by the government. Does the memory of that still linger on to dissuade people or groups and organizations like yourself from joining in?
Yes, I think having one negative experience is not very motivating, but what happened in Homa Bay, it was not a failure in the sense that people were very excited about the project and they wanted to take, they really saw it as a way, as a means to voice their concerns about development in their area. So from that perspective, we are optimistic, because we believe if people want to use radio and if people want to talk and they see it as a means for development, then that's the best thing that you can have.
But there's good news too. The Gambia in West Africa has had commercial radio for decades, thanks to the pioneering work of a Swedish woman who ran a pirate broadcasting station off the coast of Sweden and later moved to Africa. George Christensen owns a station called Radio 1 FM in Banjul.
Prior to Radio 1 FM, there was also another private commercial radio station, which was Radio SID. Radio SID has been in existence since the 1970s, I think it was 1970. It was probably the first commercial radio station in West Africa, independent commercial radio station. So the culture of commercial and independent radio is not new to us in the Gambia. That is coupled with the state radio station. The media scene in the Gambia, as far as radio is concerned, has been one where most of the media, the radio stations, play music. Radio SID plays a lot of music. They do not really do any other programming as such. They do request letters, which is the same thing. People phone or write in and they give requests of music. That's it. It was when we came along we saw the need to address certain aspirations, and it was touch and go in the beginning. It was a lot of errors in the beginning, but we developed quite a lot of programs, to the extent of which we give a good 40% of our airtime to community-oriented programming, and this is all without sponsorship. It is completely free. We do it as a service to the community because we feel sponsors can and do sometimes object or lay down conditions as to suitability or topics of programming.
Well, primarily, you're a commercial station.
We are a commercial radio station, yes.
So how do you combine these two functions then? To me, it sounds almost incompatible.
No, that is a Western concept that is incompatible. We play music, we do adverts, we do what we call moral adverts. We do not advertise cigarettes, we do not advertise tobacco, we do not advertise environmentally unsound products, we do not advertise skin bleaching agents, chemicals, products which we feel are not in unison with our Gambian society. The problem we do have is from time to time certain parameters change, but on the whole we feel we can maintain the balance. We do adverts for various things, from the public transport corporation to the telephone company to the local shop down the road telling us he's got new dresses for Christmas or Tabaski or whatever. And in the evening we do have our community programs. One of the things we do during the community programs is we do not have any advertisements.
But can you pay your way? Is it economically viable?
No, it's not. So I'm a bad manager. My bank manager keeps telling me that I'm always in the red. But the money is not the ultimate. We have to start by finding ways. We have to pioneer ways and means of exposing our communities, our society, to certain positive influences. Radio is a very powerful medium. We service an area which is approximately 250,000, 300,000 people strong. That is what they call the Greater Banjul area, the capital city, and the surrounding dormitory towns that occupy that area. On our own figures, which are not very scientific, we envisage that something like 30,000 to 40,000 people listen to us at any given time, which is quite high. It is a very radio-orientated area. It's a very radio-orientated population. And one of the things we have done is we have used the telephone system for audience participation rather effectively. It gives me great pleasure, actually, in that last week, the telephone company, Gamtel, sent me results of a survey they did. They put some counters on our telephones to record the number of telephone calls we get. And on the Saturday, where we have a youth program in the morning that is totally run by kids up to 16, they take over the station, they engineer themselves, they run the show, they do their own programs, they talk to their peer groups in whatever language, they talk about whatever they like, and then we have various other programs right through the day. We had 2,450 telephone calls on a Saturday.
Which isn't bad going at all, but how long can he remain financially viable? South African companies like MultiChoice, however, are making claims about the quick growth of television in Africa. MultiChoice now has over 930,000 subscribers across the continent. Having started in Nigeria, Ghana, Lesotho and Botswana, they're now looking at the East African market, such as Kenya. Just under a million subscribers doesn't sound much now, but it is growing. This year should see a record number of satellite launches, amongst them PanAmSat 4, which will provide 18 channels of television to Southern African viewers as from August of this year.
So how important will radio be in the next 5 years, bearing in mind the growth of television, even in some of the poorest countries? Steve Buckley again.
In Africa, where this conference is being held today, it's still the foremost medium of communication for the majority of people. Because it's a medium which doesn't require literacy, and because it's a medium which the means of reception are relatively straightforward and relatively cheap compared with television. But even in the developed countries, even in Europe, radio is an extremely important medium. 95% of people listen to radio during the course of the week, and whilst television is becoming increasingly fragmented by the multiplicity of television channels. Local radio and community-type radio is still able to provide a unique service. I think the prospects for community radio as a medium are probably somewhat better than television at this moment in time.
Radio Netherlands in magnificent mono.
Back to HF, and Burundi's back on shortwave after a break since April of last year. 6140 kilohertz is the traditional channel in use, although BBC Monitoring notes the broadcast is still erratic due to technical problems. And about 10 days ago, reports appeared in several European newspapers. As a result, some editors jumped to the conclusions that Voice of America was shutting down altogether. So what's really going on? Jeff Kahn is the station's director, and on the line from Washington, I asked him for the background.
Well, I think what the vice president was referring to in his statement, which is the one that has been quoted widely now, was the future of an operation called VOA Europe, which in fact, of course, now is in many parts of the world in addition to Europe. And it's a program service that combines popular music and some information. And it's become sufficiently successful so that we now think that we can find advertiser support for it and, in effect, spin it off or make it a partner to the rest of the federally funded operation that's known as the Voice of America. So all he was announcing was that federal funding would end for it, and I think the concept that he had in mind, and which we've been discussing, would be that the federal portion would be taken up by private funding.
So, I mean, you've got people who want to buy it.
Yes. Buy it may not be the right word, but that want to be our partner in it. That's correct.
Music and more. VOA Europe, now heard in more places than ever before, including Kampala, Uganda, on Radio Sanyu, 88.2 FM. We're the place for more music, more often. VOA Europe.
Note that VOA Europe is also heard in Africa and other parts of the world when the regional program in English is not on the air. What will happen there?
If the arrangement that we would like to work out materializes, it would give greater resources for it to be heard more broadly and for us to be able to put more into VOA Europe as a separate program service. In a way, Jonathan, it's like BBC World Service Television is paid for by advertising and is entirely separate from the funding that the government of England puts into BBC World Service Radio. The programming would change, and probably the name of it would ultimately change as well.
So we don't see this development as a cut in VOA's budget?
Well, there is going to be, realistically, there are cuts in our budget, and the truth is that it's partly to be able to absorb those cuts, hopefully without damaging the rest of our programming, that we've begun to think creatively about parts of our budget that we might no longer have to have come from federal dollars.
But are these cuts on top of what we were talking about last time we were on the air in November when you had to close, for example, the Bethany relay station?
Yes. The president's budget, which was announced this week, will actually reduce the funding for the Voice of America by about $10 to $13 million below the figure that we had achieved through the reductions that we talked about when we discussed this some months ago.
VOA's new budget is $230 million. But VOA's investment in new technology remains. Their appearance on internet has been a success. But what about plans for digital audio broadcasting?
Well, here I would in part defer to you, Jonathan. You're one of the world's gurus in all of these things. But I do believe that it'll have a place. We need to be on as many sources of information as we possibly can be. The Voice of America at one time was a shortwave service. Now it also, as you know, controls its own medium wave or AM transmitters. In addition to that, the Voice of America is now on affiliate stations all over the world. We are also, as we were discussing, on the Internet. And we also have a telephone service that at least people from the Arab world can reach us on. I think that ultimately we and you and all broadcasters, both domestic and internationally, will be on as many different sources as possible. Right now in the United States, we have a great many incompatible technologies, and I know that this is happening elsewhere in the world, and I think to the extent that we can minimize that, we should do it.
Wednesday on NBC Super Channel at 7:30, great golfing action from the Madeira Island Open. A top quality field are battling for the honours on a spectacular course set up in the Madeira Mountains. At 9:30, Inside Edition has all the latest from the O.J. Simpson trial, plus a host of the day's other top stories.
Expansion by some commercial U.S. TV stations into the world of international broadcasting is actually having a detrimental effect on WorldNet, the U.S. government's television operation.
Yes, right now the television service of the federal government is not expanding. One of the reasons for that, of course, is that coming out of this country, we do have CNN, and we now have the NBC Super Channel and so forth. So the feeling is that there's a lot of private broadcasting and television at the moment, and also because television is very costly, and as you and your listeners are well aware, we are under intense pressure to cut the federal budget. In fact, as you probably also know, there is a very heated dispute over whether there should continue to be any public funding of public television and radio in this country. At that kind of a moment in our history, it would be hard to expand our television, but I think we'll keep our television probably about the level that it's currently surviving at, but it's not doing anything like the BBC World Service television is.
Jeff Cowan of the Voice of America. Next week, a new network launches in the UK on medium wave. Talk Radio's announcements are self-explanatory.
You're listening to test transmissions for Talk Radio UK, the nation's new 24-hour station for talk entertainment. From Tuesday the 14th of February, Talk Radio UK, broadcasting across England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales on 1053 and 1089 kHz AM. We also broadcast from Newcastle-upon-Tyne on 1071 and from Liverpool, Fareham and Torbay on 1107. From Tuesday the 14th of February, Talk Radio UK on 1053 and 1089 medium wave, the nation's new 24-hour station for talk entertainment. You've never heard talk like it.
So, on the frequencies formerly used by BBC Radio 1. Now, media news from the World Radio TV Handbook's editorial office in Amsterdam. Joining me is Andy Sennett.
Starting in South America, where the Xers are reporting some increased shortwave activity in connection with the ongoing border dispute between Ecuador and Peru. One station which was rather irregular, but which is currently being heard daily, is Radio Quito in Ecuador, which is on 4920 kHz, 4920, with a listed transmitter power of 5 kilowatts. Meanwhile, according to HCJB's DX Partyline program, the relay of Radio Nacional del Ecuador, which they carry normally between 17:30 and 18 hours UTC on Mondays to Fridays, has temporarily been suspended.
Okay, the frequency to watch then, 4920 kHz for Radio Quito. More news from South America.
Yes, on FidoNet, John Stevens in the USA reports that he's hearing Radio Nacional de Colombia every evening on 4955 kHz, 4955, with a strong signal, and they're asking for reception reports on that frequency. And Robert Houston, the production coordinator of Radio for Peace International in Costa Rica, posted the station's current schedule on the internet this week. A 2-kilowatt transmitter, which is temporarily out of service for about a week, normally operates on 6200 kHz at 1330 to 17 hours UTC, on 12150 kHz between midnight and 1330 using upper sideband, and on 17910 kHz between 1700 and midnight. The 30 kilowatt transmitter is used on 7385 kHz between 21 hours and 08 hours UTC, and that's extended to 15 hours UTC at weekends with Europe as the target area. Then there's a 5 kilowatt transmitter running 24 hours a day on 9400 kHz upper sideband, and finally a 3 kilowatt transmitter on 15050 kHz, which is on between 12 hours and 02 hours UTC. You can contact Radio for Peace International by email to rfpicr@sol.racsa.co.cr.
Talking of internet addresses, I managed to get an internet feedback this week saying that we should do more about the use of single sideband in the future on shortwave. Will it still actually be used in the future, bearing in mind, of course, developments like digital satellite broadcasting? We'll see. Thanks for the suggestion. Now on to the Middle East.
Indeed, last time I was on the programme, I mentioned that this is the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, and I said to watch out for extended transmissions. Well, that's exactly what Jorma Mantila in Finland did, and he was rewarded on the 4th and 5th of this month with reception of the Voice of Palestine in Jericho on 675 kHz, 675. At 22 hours UTC, he heard the clear identification in Arabic, Huna Sout Palestine. Unfortunately, we have a 120 kilowatt commercial station on 675 here in the Netherlands, so I don't think the Voice of Palestine will get into my logbook.
Nor mine. Raditya Gol is too strong. Now up to Melbourne, Australia, where Mike Bird is waiting with the propagation survey over the last 7 days. What's it been like, Mike?
Well, Jonathan, the sun woke up and produced 4 solar flares last week. Also, the geomagnetic field was active to stormy during Thursday, Friday and Saturday. Solar activity ranged between moderate and low. 2 low-strength M1 solar flares were reported on Wednesday, the 1st of February. On Friday, the 3rd, an M4 flare peaked at 0151 UTC, and then on Saturday, the 4th, an M2 peaked at 1544 UTC. The solar flux was 87 on Wednesday, the 1st. By Sunday, the 5th, it had dropped to 81, and by Tuesday, the 7th, it had risen to 84. The average works out to 84.4, which equals an effective sunspot number of 30, and that is up 1 point on the previous week's average. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 21 and 7, which represents active to quiet conditions. Between 9 hours UTC on Thursday the 2nd and 9 hours UTC on Saturday the 4th, the magnetic field ranged between unsettled and minor storm conditions. Since then, the magnetic field has been quiet to unsettled with the odd active period.
Good gracious, what a washing list. What about between now and next week?
Well, IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will be low. The geomagnetic field will hopefully quieten today and remain quiet to unsettled until Sunday, when we expect a recurrent coronal hole on the sun will produce unsettled to active conditions until Tuesday. Hopefully, it will then quieten for the remainder of the week.
Thanks, Mike. And that's all for this edition of Media Network. Join us again in 7 days. In the meantime, have a pleasant weekend.